you're holding on Lamedes, about 15 lines from the top by the two dots. Line begins, Lahitz Laz. We learned in the mission of the list of things that have to be said, that can be said b'chol loshon, and the list of things that have to be said b'loshon HaKodesh. And so the first one on the list that can be said b'chol loshon was Parsha Soita. That's how it comes in from Masechta. And the rest of them were, and then we're going to go through the rest of the list. There's the mission that's a vidri ma'aser. The next one that's been said in any language is a vidri ma'aser, the declaration that you make when you've taken care of your outstanding ma'asers for the last couple of years. Menolam, so where do we know that can be said in any language? Just did, because the pasuk is v'amar t'lefnei Hashem aletecha. You should say before Hashem, bi'arti ha'kodesh min ha'bayis, I've gotten rid of all the holy stuff from the house. So v'yalef amira misoita. So therefore we learn by Xer Shava the word amira from the soita, meaning the halosh and true omer, that's whatever language. Just like by the soita it says, v'amar ha'koin lo isha, or Rashi gives it v'amar ele isha. The same thing over here, it says v'amar t'lefnei Hashem aletecha. So by Xer Shava we learn that just like by the soita it can be in any language, so also here, which we said there was the Ramata can be in any language. Yeah.
It's unusual to draw Kavachomer or Egish
from
such a Marta means.
No, because the Ramata means you should say. So basically, it means you can say it in any language that you're capable of saying it in and understanding it in.
Okay, but how would you have said it if you didn't?
You would say, let's say, I don't know, yeah. Or you would use one of the words that actually what the Gemara is going to say as we go through over here. There's certain key words which we use as a Gzeira Shava that on the contrary that we learn them from the Levim to say that from the Levim Har Grizim and Har Evil that have to be said in Lashon Kodesh. The Torah could have used one of those.
Imply the other way.
Okay, so that's Amalav Zvid Labaya. So actually, Rav Zvid asks Labaya the way of Amira Malavim. If we're learning Gzeira Shava Amira, instead of learning it from the Sota and saying it's meaning language, why don't we instead learn from what it says by Levim, where it says by Hagrizim and Harevel, where it says V'omru Levim V'omru, where Malhal and B'loshon HaKodesh Hakan B'loshon HaKodesh, so by Levim it had to be in Loshon HaKodesh. You should argue here it means the same thing. The answer is Donen Amira Gredesa Amira Gredesa. We make Zeta Shava from the word from the root Omar without anything else. Gredesa means by itself. From Amira that says by itself without anything else. They haven't done an Amira Gredesa, Ma'ani of Amira. We can't learn it. We can't use it for Xeda Shava, a place where it uses two verbs. Ono, which means to speak up, and Omar, which means to say. That Levium, the expression is V'onu HaLevium V'omru. The Levium should speak up and say.
That you cannot.
That, so you can't, since over here by the Vidri Meiser, it only says V'amarta, it doesn't say V'onisa, then you can't learn the Xeda Shava from the Levium. Rather, you have to learn it from the Sota, whereby the Sota also says V'omar. Tosfos has a different gear, brings on Lam Gimel Lam Aleph. That's a different gear, but it sort of amounts to the same thing that we learn where it says Aniya Va'amira. We learn from another place where it says Aniya where it says Va'anisa Va'amarta. We learn to someplace else, to Levim where it says Va'anu Va'amru. We don't learn where it only says Ana. We don't learn that from only the word Ana. We need the two words together, Ana and Amar. So therefore, it can mean any language. And by the way, before I should point out, if it weren't for that, we would think that it has to be in Lashon Kodesh, because we would think it's placed together with the story of Vidri Meiser is in the Torah right after Bikurim. Bikurim we listed in the Mishnah as one of the things that have to be said for Lashon Kodesh. So you would think that there's a hekesh between them, therefore that this would have to be the Lashon Kodesh. Also, that's what we need the Zera Shava for to tell us that not.
What's the expression for Bikurim?
Bikurim, it's the V'anisa V'amarta. So that actually we are learning from the Levim V'onu Levim V'amru. That's the point. We're going to talk about that later, yes. Okay. Tanya, Reb Shimon ben Yochayim, middle of Amud Beis Amud Beis. Reb Shimon Yochayim, Adam Omer Shvacha V'kol Nomuch U'gnusa V'kol Ram. When a person is saying something praiseworthy about himself, he should say it in a low voice, like not to be a big shot about it. U'gnusa, but something that's a degradation for him, he should say V'kol Ram, out loud. Shvacha v'kel nomuch, where do we see that? In Vidri Ameiser. Because in Vidri Ameiser, the pasuk does not use the word v'onu. It does not use the word v'onu, that he should speak up, which implies, therefore, that he should say it in an undertone. When you say in this whole thing, v'arti ha'kodesh v'na bayis, we're there, the person is sort of complimenting himself. Lo yavarti mitzvah secha, I didn't violate any mitzvahs. I've done everything that you said. Something like that. A person shouldn't be speaking out in a loud voice. On the other hand, we learn that somebody should say something degrading to himself. He should say that in a loud voice. That we learn from Mikra Bikurim. The psukim that you say there by the Bikurim, beginning, Arami Ovedavi. What's the gnus over there? Well, we know by the Haggadah, actually, Maska B'gnus, that we mentioned that. But specifically, Rashi says over here, the gnus is, Rashi has a new explanation, but when we say Arami Ovedavi, so in the Haggadah we say that it means Arami, the Arami Lavan, tried to destroy my father. So what are we saying, basically? We're saying we ourselves are descended from Lavan the Imar, so the Rachel and Leah, and Bila and Zilpah also, are the daughters of Lavan. Which means, therefore, effectively what we're saying, when we start out Mikra Bikurim, we're starting with, you should know, our ancestor Lavan was a cheater and a swindler and a horrible and an all-around horrible guy. That's Gnus. Yeah.
We had other ancestors as well,
but the point is we had that one. There was nothing to be too proud of. The question is, what do you mean of Gnusa? So you're telling me when a person has something degrading to say about himself, he should say it out loud? But Rabbi Yochanan says another thing in the name of Shimon Yochai. Why did the Chachamim make a takana that he say Shimon Esri quietly? In order not to embarrass people who did Averis. Because during your tefillah, you're supposed to be saying Vidri. Now we say Vidri afterwards. We say Arshamnu afterwards. And that also we say in an undertone. But apparently, the original idea was that, like, for example, in the middle of the bracha, slachlana, really, in every bracha, you can be adding requests of your own. So apparently the idea is that in slachlana, you're going to be mentioning any specific avedas you did, and we don't want to embarrass you by that. That's the point. And in fact, you see that the Torah does not want people who do avedas to be embarrassed, because you see that the Torah made the same place that you, in the same place you shecht an ola, is where you also shecht the chatas. The Pasuk in fact mentions that a couple of times. And the idea is that way when a person is bringing a korban, you don't realize that he's bringing a chatas. You think he's bringing an ola. So that, and therefore, there's less of an embarrassment. That's what Gemara is going to get to, the differences in procedures, too. Right now we're talking about the Shetabi. So therefore, so what do you mean with saying that a person should say Gnusa B'Kilram? The answer is, you're right. The word in Rav Shimon Yochai's original statement shouldn't be that you say gnusay, something degrading, something embarrassing to yourself in public. That you taka shouldn't do. Ela emet tsairai. Rather, when you talk about your tsar, you should be saying that in public. So here we're talking about tsar in the past. The tsar that we had from Lavan and from going down to Mitzrayim, which is the theme of what we say during Mikra Bikurim. But it means, so those are in the past. It's not, you know, what we're saying, we hope that we don't have such tzaddis in the future. But also in general, when a person has tzar, he should be saying about it loudly.
Does that mean when we discuss what gnus should be said?
Yes, so we're saying that gnus should be said quietly, yes. We'll revisit it soon. Wait. So, Kiddetan, yeah, as we learn in a Braisa, by a Mitzvah, it says the Tomei Yikra, that you should call out Tomei, or that the Tomei should call out Tomei. Why? Tzorech lo yediyat tzair l'rabim means he has to publicly inform everybody of his tzair, v'rabim v'aksham l'v'rachmim. And that way the rabim, anybody who hears him crying out, Tomei, will know to daven for him, to daven for Rachmanos to him. And inform him. And in general, v'chol mishi'ira b'dover, anybody who something bad happens to him, n'shkein l'idach, then he should inform the public so they can ask for rachmim for him. So that's what, when you have tsar, then that you should be saying out loud. That's what we're saying. Mikra Bikurim, which involves tsar, mentioning our tsar in the past and hoping that it doesn't happen in the future, is something that should be said out loud.
But not gnus.
Gnus is something you should say quietly. Okay, Gufer, getting back to what we said before, why did the Chachamim make that you daven Shemin Esri quietly? In order not to embarrass people who drew Averis, because the Pasuk makes the same place, both of them have to be shechted, the Chatas and the Oila both have to be shechted in the north side of the Azara, as opposed to Kodshim Kalim, which can be shechted anywhere in the Azara. So, question is, like you're saying, Valois, so you're telling me there's no difference? Well, he's condemning. You have what happens with the blood. Dam chatas l'mayla v'dam oil l'mata. The blood of the chatas has to be placed on the top half of the zeach. The blood of the oil has to be still, has to be thrown against the bottom half of the zeach. So that'll be an obvious difference. When they see that this guy is standing over there and the blood is being daubed on the top half. That's not close, but that's basically the answer. Hashem Kohen would yada. The Kohen realizes what's going on. Not so much that you can't go that close, but most Israelim who are in the Azara are not going to be paying such close attention necessarily. That they're going to realize that there's a lot of kavanas being brought at any given time. But the shchita is something that the shchita kshedah bizarre. So besides that the owner himself can be shechting, any person, Kohen, Levi, Yisrael could be shechting. So therefore they're going to realize if it's able to be shechted someplace else. Once you get to the sprinkler ready, only the Kohen is the one handling the sprinkling, so therefore it's not going to be so. So I guess that answers your question as far as the burning as well. It's true, all of an oiler is burned, a chafras is not. I guess it's the same thing though, that's handled by the Kohen. There's a lot of kavanas happening. Also true, right.
And even spraying of blood, if someone's blood there from before, from the whole day.
Also true, yes.
So the Kohen knows what he's doing, but someone else knows.
Okay, the question is, what ikah chakas nekeva olozach? So fine, we have another important difference. A chakas is davka, a female animal, a female sheep or goat. This is true of anybody except for the Kohen Gadol and the king. But okay, we're not talking about that. But a regular person, davka has to be a female animal, olozach, whereas an ola has to be a male animal. So that'll be an obvious difference everybody will notice. The answer is hasan mitzvah. Well, you know what, for us city folk,
right.
Yes, it's not so easy to tell. People who lived on farms their whole life, yeah, they could tell pretty easily. But the answer is, the answer is michsi ba'alya. Yes, but over there, the genitals are covered, of a female in particular, are covered by the fat tail. The sheep they brought for Kobanas had these very big fat tails that hung behind them. So therefore, it covers that whole area. It's not so noticeable. Next question is Tanach Kivsa. Fine, that works if a person is bringing a female sheep. What about if a person is bringing a female goat? They don't have a big tail. The goat has only a very short tail. The answer is Hasam Iyud Kamichsik Nafke. Yes, but in that case, that the person himself is sort of at fault for embarrassing himself. He could have brought a sheep, which then it wouldn't be so noticeable. People would see a sheep. They wouldn't automatically realize that's a female and realize the chatas. So now he chooses to bring a goat. What can I see here? He's bringing a goat. That's his problem.
Is the matter which one same price or?
Well, who knows? I don't know. They may have been slightly different prices, but I don't say. The pasture, the goat may have been cheaper, but I don't know. There's a Gemara we learned way back in Sacha, and it's also at the end of Crisis, that the Gemara discusses over there which one is considered the better carbon. So you have some sukkim that mention the sheep first, and some that in particular the chatas, where it mentions the goat first, implying that they're both on an equal level. And the Gemara tells a story over there involving Yanei HaMelech and the Kohen Gadol Yisachar Ishchar Barkai, that the king and queen are arguing which is better, goat meat or sheep meat, and they bring in the Kohen Gadol to settle the question. Because what actually happened, this Kohen Gadol Yisachar Ishchar Barkai used to not do the avodah in the proper way. He considered it beneath my dignity to get my hands dirty with the korbanos, but he would wear gloves.
Oh.
He would wear gloves when he did that, which is also So now they bring him in, so like when they ask him this question, he's like, what kind of question is that? Of course sheep are better, that's why they're for the korban tumim. The king is upset, is insulted, like you do like that, and so he calls in his guard and orders him to chop off his right hand that he used to wave like that. Well, Yisachar doesn't want to lose his right hand. He bribes them to cut off his left hand instead. The king hears about it. He ends up losing both his hands. So the Gemara says that at least he got it in this world rather than another Mahabah. But the Gemara ends up saying over there that actually he didn't even realize what we derive from these psukim, that actually sheep and goats are on an equal level. Yes, it's true sheep are brought for the Talmud, but when it comes to a chatas, for example, there's a certain advantage to a goat. And Pasuk mentioned it first. But had he realized that, he wouldn't have thought it's such a...
But he went to the king like that.
That was why the king thought it's a chutzpah thing. Yeah. Okay.
Which king was it?
Yeah, no, it says... Yeah, one of the Hashmonai kings, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we learned that. Okay. It was in Pesachim at the end of the fourth paragraph. Yeah. Okay, the question is, chatas d'avodas kechavim, what about the person who has to bring a chatas for accidentally worshipping avodah zarah, where there, of necessity, it has to be a goat, that's listed in Parshas Shlach, and there specifically says a goat. There's no option for sheep. Ma'ika lemer. So what are you going to say there? Then you still have that the guy is embarrassed publicly. He's bringing in a female goat, and everybody realizes it's a female. The answer is hasam nichsa finezel. In that case, actually, it is better that he gets embarrassed. He heiched in a kapara. Like that way, it will be an extra kapara for him. He needs an extra kapara for such a major avera. So like this, the fact that he has that public humiliation, but everybody realizes what this korban is for, that itself will help be his kapara. And Tosfos points out, once he has that, you don't have to do other changes. You still shechted in the same place as the oila. You don't have to totally embarrass him. This is b'shogeg. He did it b'shogeg. He didn't realize it was an avodah zarah. He didn't realize this is the proper. He didn't realize that this is the normal way that this avodah zarah is served. Whatever. There's a lot of possible cases. That's b'shogeg again. They bring an interesting thing from the Brisker Rav, Rabbi Shaul Leib Diskin, that he says, if you look at the psukim that talk about the regular chatas, which we said can be either a sheep or a goat, when it comes to the goat, the Torah uses the expression that the Torah says that it'll be a kapara for him. By the sheep, it says it'll be a kapara al chatosay ashechata, for the avera that he did. Now, why doesn't it say that by the goat? He answers, because if our Gemara is saying that the extra humiliation is a bit more of a kapara of him, it's not just a kapara for the one avera that he did. It's a more general kapara for things that he's done wrong that maybe he's not going to carve for. By the goat, where he has that extra embarrassment, then it doesn't say, as if to imply, not only he's getting a kapara for this one avera, eating chalev or blood or what have you, that he did, he's getting a more general kapara. Whereas by the kibsa, where he's spared that embarrassment, he's getting kapara for the one avera, for chalev or whatever it is that he ate, but not more generally. Then the Mishnah continued with the next thing that can be said in any language, Kriyashma. Menoah, how do we know that? Dechtiv Shema Yisrael, because it says listen Yisrael. The word Shema actually has a double meaning in Tanakh. Rashi mentions this in a number of places. The word Shema doesn't always mean only to listen, like for it to come into your ears. It can also mean to understand. Paris says to Yosef, for example, Tishma Chaloyim Lifter, right? So you hear a dream to interpret. It doesn't mean just that you hear as in the sound waves strike your ear. It means you understand it. So Shema Yisrael also means understand Yisrael. Choloshim Shat HaShemeh, so it means any language that you understand. We learn it in Brisa. Kriyishma Kiksava, Yuvei Rebbe. Rebbe says that Shema has to be done as it's written, meaning in Lashon Kodesh. Rabbanan, the Chacham Mem B'Cholashon. The Chacham says it can mean any language. My time is a Rebbe. What's Rebbe's reasoning? Why doesn't he say that it has to be that it can mean any language? Amakra B'Hoyu, because the Pasuk says B'Hoyu Hadvarim Ha'ila, which implies B'Hava Yosin Yu. B'Hoyu, they should be, meaning they have to be the way they are in the Torah. Rabbanan, what did the Rabbanan answer? He just said, Amakra Shema B'Choloshon Shatah Shemeah. Okay, V'Rabbanon Nami Haksiv B'Hoyu, so what does Rabbanon do with the word B'Hoyu? The answer is Ahu Shaleitu Enel Atzeya. They use that to say it has to be B'Hoyu, it has to be in the order in which it is in the Torah. You can't read Shema, you can't say Shema out of order. Not the parish, it's not so obvious. First of all, when it comes to the words, okay, if you say them out of order, then you stop making a joke of it. But let's say you say Tzukim out of order. Maybe not. I mean, there are some psukim in Shema that sort of stand as a unit on their own. On the face of it, maybe you could say them. And in fact, when we say out of order, by the way, we also mean, for example, let's say, so you say, you know, you say Shema, you say Baruch Shem, you say V'Ahavta. Then instead of continuing with B'Hoyu Advar Ma'el, let's say by accident you skip it and go to Rishinanta. Now when you realize your mistake, you can't just say B'Hoyu Advar Ma'el there. You have to go back to that and continue in order with that and then Rishinanta and then Osavta and so forth.
Everything.
No, you don't have to start everything over because you only missed that for one pasuk in the middle. But the point is you can't say it out of order. Okay, for Rebbe Shalek and Amafrem and Ale, fine, where does Rebbe learn that you can't say the psukim or the words out of order? Naklim Dvarim Hadvarim. He learns that from the fact that the Torah could have said V'hoyu Dvarim Ha'ela, and instead it says V'hoyu Hadvarim Ha'ela. So the V'hoyu teaches us that it has to be in Lashon Kodesh, and the Hey teaches us that it has to be in order. V'Rabbanan, whereas the Rabbanan would say Dvarim Hadvarim Le'mashmu, they don't consider that to be a valid Jerusha. No, they just say that the fact that the Torah could have said Dvarim, and if it has Dvarim, we don't learn anything from that extra hay. That's just the style of the Lashon. Okay, V'Rabbanan, okay, so that so far explains the Rabbanan's Shitta. Okay, the question is, V'Revi Nami Hapsiv Shema? Fine, according to Revi, what does he do with the word Shema? Which the Chachamim said means that you can say it in any language that you understand. Answer: Rebbe would say that the word Shema means that your ears have to hear what you say with your mouth. You can't just say it moving your lips. It has to be spoken in a way that your ears can hear. It can be in a whisper, but still. Rabbanan Savri Rakamanda Amar, where the Rabbanan disagree with that. They say we hold like the opinion that says Hakoda Shema Avalishmi with a Mishneh Brachot, Hakoda Shema Avalishmi Alodne, if somebody reads Shema, suddenly says Shema without making his ears hear it, so he just moves his lips, Yotze, but yeah, that is Yotze. Tosus points out that is in fact the halacha. Given that the Gemara could have said that maybe the Rabbanan are learning two things from the word Shema. One, that it can mean any language, and two, that you have to hear it. The fact that they don't say that shows that in fact the halacha is like the opinion that l'chapchila you're supposed to say Shema Hashmei Ala Oznecha, you're supposed to hear it. But the Yeved, if you just say like that without moving your lips, without actually making any sound, the Yeved you're yotze.
What do you mean the Yeved when you
means, for example,
you can say one or the other.
Let's say you don't have a chance to repeat it. Then you were still yotze. Yeah. Okay. Question is, Lema Kasaga Rebbe Kolatera B'chol Loshen Nemra. Does that mean that if Rebbe is saying that we have here a specific pasuk that implies that Shema has to be said in Hebrew, does that mean that we would say that the Torah is meant to be read in any language? Now, what do we mean by that? There's a lot of different explanations in the Rishonim what this means. But basically, what the Gemara is going to be dealing with is machlokas. Is the Torah b'chol loshen nemra or b'loshen hakodesh nemra? Now, there's no question. Obviously, when the Eibishter gave the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, it was in Hebrew. Okay, we say the voice by Harsinai divided into all the languages of the world, but primarily it was given in Hebrew. That there's no question about. The question basically is, according to Rashi, the question is, for example, when you're laning in shul, do you have to lane in loshen hakodesh, or is it a valid kriya if you're reading in other languages as well? Tosfos in Megillah, where the Gemara is also brought, discusses that. They disagree with that because what Kriya Satorah anyway? Midaraita, there's no such thing as Kriya Satorah. The whole concept of Kriya Satorah that we lay on Shabbos and Mondays and Thursdays is only the Rabbanan. So Tosfos argues from time to time. No, the original idea that you have to read the Torah within every 3 days is actually from Moshe Rabbeinu, but it's not part of the Torah that the Eibishter gave Moshe Rabbeinu. It's Moshe's Takana, Moshe and his based in Takana, so it's considered the Rabbanan. So Tosfos discusses over there, okay, maybe it could be talking about like Parsha Zohar, which is Deraisa. Up there you'd have the question, does it have to be in Lashon Kodesh? Tosfos over here discusses that rather the question is, can Torah be translated into other languages? Does it have Kedusha if it's written in other languages?
Translated means
to read it, but it means out of a translation, in other words. Other Mepharshim talk about other possibilities. Maybe the question would be, are you yotze to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah if you're learning it in other languages? Is it, let's say, an English chumash? Does it have the kedusha of the Torah? Not even a printed one, maybe not. Printing is a whole other issue. But let's say if somebody were to hand write a Sefer Torah in English, would it have the same level of kedusha? So that's what we're discussing over here. That the question is, if we say the Torah is given b'chol loshen, then it means all languages are on an equal level as far as that's concerned. If we say Torah b'loshen hakodesh nemra, then it means it's only meant to be in loshen kodesh. So the point is, Rebbe seems to hold that the Torah ordinarily can be said in any language, because the Isakhadah v'loshen hakodesh nemra v'hayu d'kasev rachman olam, because otherwise, what would you need the pasuk v'hayu? If you say that the whole Torah, if you say, for example, let's go with Rashi, that whenever you're learning the Torah in public, it has to be in Hebrew. Why would we think that Shema could be in anything other than Hebrew? Why would we need a pasuk v'hayu to tell us that? Obviously, Rebbe must hold that ordinarily you can learn the Torah or you can say other parts of Torah in English or Greek or what have you. Only in the case of Shema is the Torah telling us it has to be in Hebrew.
V'hayu
ad var meila means it has to be just like this, like it says in the Torah, yeah. The answer is no, it's Rech Mishim D'Chiv Shema. True, but Rebbe could argue that no, the reason why we need the Pasuk for Hoyu is because we have the Pasuk Shema. We said off the Pasuk Shema, so the word Shema itself implies any language you understand. In other words, Rebbe might, we can't prove from this what Rebbe would hold. Rebbe might hold that normally Torah B'chol Loshen Nemra, and the word Shema even supports that, but because we have the word B'Hoyu, then that we need the word B'Hoyu therefore to tell us that not. And let's go the other way around. Should we say that the Rabbanon evidently hold that normally the Torah is only meant to be read in Hebrew? Because otherwise, if the whole Torah anyway can be read in any language, Shema because of Rahman Allah, even what do you need the word Shema? And again, it's the Chmashem Rechti Bahayu, because you have the other way around. According to the Rabbanon, that they say that Shema means any language you understand, and Bahayu, they don't use it to mean Dafke in Hebrew, they use it to mean in order. So they would say, given that you have the Pasuk Bahayu, you might have misunderstood to say that this is an exception, that it has to be said in Lashon Kodesh. Therefore, the Torah says the word Shema, even though maybe the whole Torah can be said in B'chol Lashon, but you have the word Bahayu that you would think means not. Therefore, we need the word Shema to tell us otherwise. So the actual halacha is like the Rabbanan, that you can say Shema in any language. What it says in Shulchan Aruch is, if you're going to do that, you should be saying, you need to be just as careful, it can't just be a rough translation, it has to be a precise translation, and it has to be that you're just as medactic with it as you are with the words in Shema in Hebrew. We know, for example, that when you're saying Shema in Hebrew, for example, you have to be careful of the words, that you don't slur words together, let's say, as I mentioned in the Siddur, there's an excerpt from Al-Tadab's Shulchan Aruch in the Siddur before Shema, that mentions, for example, B'chol Levavcha, or Kshartem Osam, or whatever, they have to put a little break over there so that the words aren't mispronounced. If you're saying Shema in English or what have you, you'd have to be careful of the same kinds of things in those respective languages.
You're saying English in general, you have to read the Hebrew first and then...
No, it means that you'd actually be saying, Hear, O Israel, Hashem, et cetera, yeah. Internet, speaking of Hashem, by the way, you know, somebody once pointed out to me many years ago, if you look in the art school sitter, they always, in all the brachas and in Shema and everything, they translate the name of Hashem, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, they translate as Hashem, H-A-S-H-E-M. You're not necessarily Yotzev by saying that, because that's not a real name of Hashem, that's like a nickname of Hashem. So in the Tchilas Hashem sitter, they translate it as Lord, which is more valid, of the Halacha. That's considered more of a real name of Hashem. There is even an opinion, the Mamloyas hold, that when you're saying, even if you're saying a bracha, or I guess Shema, or whatever, in some other language, you still have to say Hashem's name in Hebrew. But he would hold that you could say, that you would have to say, blessed are you, Adonai, our God, etc.
They didn't want to write Hashem in Astra.
They didn't want to, but whatever it is, I mean, the fact is, if you actually read literally what it says there, if you read out of the English art scroll, blessed are you, Hashem, you're not going to be able to, according to almost all opinions. Yeah. Next thing, tefillah. The Mishnah said that tefillah, meaning Shemina Esrei, is another thing that you can daven in any language. Why? Because rachami, tefillah is asking the Eishter for rachmanos. Therefore, kol hecha deboi matzli. So, however you're able to say it, it is appropriate to daven, and you're asking Hashem for rachmanos in your own language. Okay, the question is, tefillah b'chol loshen. So, you're telling me that you can daven Shemina Esrei in any language? But Rav Yehuda said, "La'olam al yishal adam tzrach v'loshen aramis." A person should not ask for his needs from the Eibishter in Aramaic. Da'amar Rav Yechanan, "Kol ashoyok tzrach v'loshen arami." Anybody who asks Hashem for his needs in Aramaic, "Ein malach ha'asharis nizkokin lo." The malach ha'asharis don't get involved to bring this tefillah to the Eibishter. Lefisha in Malach Hasharis Makir in the Loshon Arami, because the Malach Hasharis do not recognize Loshon Arami. Now, what does this mean? There's again a vast number of explanations in Rishonim what this means. Among the different possibilities are, first of all, what it means. Tosfos, not over here, but Tosfos elsewhere, I think in Megillah, discusses that when we say that, what do we mean the Malachim don't know Aramaic? The Malachim even know people's thoughts, which leads to a fresh round of discussion among the Rishonim and Achronim. Where does Tosfos get the Malachim know people's thoughts? In fact, the Zohar says they don't. That's a whole side issue. But assuming that they know people's thoughts, don't they automatically know Aramaic? People speak in that language. There's a lot of different explanations. There's an explanation that the Malachim do understand Aramaic, they just don't like it. They don't consider it to be a respectable language. Which then that gets into the question, is it specifically Aramaic? Because then the Rosh says Aramaic is so close to Hebrew, they're very closely related languages, it's more like a corruption of Hebrew. As opposed to, for example, the Malachim would have no objection, let's say to English, it's nothing like Hebrew at all. But with Aramaic, which Aramaic would be like, it's so close to Hebrew, but yet it's not Hebrew, that therefore they would consider it unimportant. Makirin can also mean, not only that they don't understand, Makirin doesn't have to mean that they don't understand, can also mean they don't recognize it as something important. There's also the possibility, though, that the Gemara means that the Malachim don't understand any other languages except the Lashon Kodesh. And then Arami, then why are we mentioning Arami? Either because it was the common spoken language in those days, or maybe the Gemara is saying even Aramaic, which has a certain degree of Kedusha, parts of Tanakh are written in Aramaic, certain tefillos are written in Aramaic, Hagim Onkelos, etc. Nevertheless, even that the Malachim don't pay any attention to. Halachas, Kamavakama, other languages.
Why do we care about what they recognize?
Because what happens is that a yachid, that's what the Gemara is going to say in a second, a yachid, an individual person, when he's davening, needs the malachim to be able to bring his tefillah to the Eibishter. So if they don't recognize, or if they don't understand the language, or consider it important, or as the case may be, then they're not going to bother.
When you bring it possible, you don't have to know what's in the possible when you bring it back to the king?
Yes, but if you don't think the possible was anything important, you're not going to bother. Mind you, there is, by the way, a great deal of discussion also among the Rishonim and Achronim over the whole question, are you b'chol allowed to say tefillahs that imply that we're asking the Malachim to bring our tefillahs to the Eibishter? There's a lot of discussion about the tefillah machmisei rachamim that we say in Slichas, midas harachamim aleinu es gaugli, from one of the piyutim of...
Today, in the
Pasha,
I'm sorry, but about the Yaakov and the Maravetah,
yeah.
Why did we ask him to bless?
Well, there the idea is, since the guy represents Malach, represents Esav, so Yaakov is saying, I want that you, as a representative of Esav, are agreeing to my brachas. But anyway, the point is, returning to our thing over here, yes, so are you b'chlal allowed to ask Malachim to help with your tefillahs? So there are a number of respectable Rishonim and Achronim that say that no, and they don't like these tefillahs. There are a lot of equally respectable Rishonim and Achronim who say that it's not an issue. Because you can't daven to a Malach, Chas v'Shalom, we only daven to the Eibishter, but we're asking them to be our shluchim, basically. Like when you ask somebody to be your shliach to go take a pan to the oil or something, that's all you're doing. You're not saying that they have any independent power to do anything, but you're asking them to be your shliach to convey your tefillah to the Eibishter.
You don't have the revenues against the Brachas,
The
Rabbim more so. The Yochid, not so much. So must the Yochid is on a high level. Wait, that's what we're talking about. Other than that, there are all these factors that come into play when it comes to tefillahs in Aramaic. Okay, so anyway, so what do we say? And that tefillah can mean any language. If we're saying you shouldn't daven in Aramaic, and maybe that means other languages as well. The answer is like Hashem of a yachid of a tzibur. One talking about a yachid, one talking about a tzibur. The yachid, since he needs the malachim to help him to bring a tefillah to the Eibishter, he shouldn't daven in a language that the malachim don't recognize or they don't consider important or what have you. The tzibur, the Eibishter never rejects the tefillahs anyway. They don't need the malachim to bring them to the Eibishter. Therefore, they can daven in Aramaic. So what do we have? Most of the tefillahs that we say in Aramaic are tefillahs that are meant to be betzibur. Kaddish, Yukum Purkan, so in the Yukum Purkan, actually, it's interesting. I mean, the first one, actually, there's no note on it in the Siddur. The second one, there's a note on it in the Siddur that a yachid who's davening alone shouldn't say. But that's more because it's talking about the tzibur. The first one is talking about the Jewish people collectively, that the Eibishter should help them. So why is that one not an issue? Because, for one thing, that's a yochid davening on behalf of the tzibur. That's less of a problem, because davening on behalf of the tzibur means the schus of the tzibur is involved, and therefore the malachim can deal with that also. Mashenkin, when you're talking about a yochid tefillah for himself, so actually, so we do have, at the end of Slichas, we have the paragraphs over there, Mache Umase, and the two paragraphs, Morem de Bishnaya, that we don't say them if there's not a minyan. Why? Because they're in Aramaic. Same problem. That's why. Yes, in the back of the Slichas it says that if you're saying Slichas b'yichidus, you don't say the paragraph Morin de Bishmaya, and you don't say the two paragraphs Nachi or Masi.
So then, are we saying before they knew Lashon HaKodesh, they only used to speak Aramaic? That means that.
What do you mean before they spoke Lashon Kodesh? When was their time before they spoke Lashon Kodesh?
No, I'm saying before Matan Torah.
Before Matan Torah, they spoke Hebrew. Where do you get that now?
Loshin
was Loshin. They didn't change the language in the tribe. Why would they have spoken Aramaic? I'm Rabbi who came from Aram to begin with, but Lahura, he spoke Loshin Kurdish. That's the original language that they wished to create the world in. Why would he be speaking something else?
We have evidence that they were speaking Aramaic.
What kind of evidence?
Oh, historical evidence. Why did it of Jewish people?
Historical evidence, listen, that's the historians don't know one thing from another.
Speak Aramaic?
They don't have any evidence of any of what anybody spoke in those days. They don't take recordings.
We have some written documents in Aramaic in Israel.
Yes, but not from the times of the Avos or the times of Matan Torah or whatever, from much later.
I'm saying yes.
From much later, yeah, eventually they started speaking Aramaic in the times of Golos Babel. Aramaic came from Babel. Okay, it has a certain kedusha to it. That's what we're saying. But originally, in the times of the first fifth mitzvah, everybody smoked lashon kodesh.
Initially, yes.
That's what we're talking about. That's what we're saying. Afterwards, when people started speaking Aramaic, but the tefillahs are nistakin in Hebrew. Which, by the way, actually, I'll mention, you know, as far as this, the whole business of not davening in Aramaic, there are some Rishonim who say that actually the reason why you shouldn't speak in Aramaic, why you shouldn't daven in Aramaic, at least not when you're a Yachid, what the Gemara is saying over here, is because Aramaic is a much more difficult language. It's much harder, much people don't know it as well, and therefore you're not going to have as much kavana with it as when you daven in Hebrew, where it's easier to understand. So that. Yeah. But no, in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, everybody spoke Lashon Kodesh. In Sefer Melachim, you have when Rav Shakeh comes to give his whole speech that make peace, give up, you know, surrender to some Chayrib, and then instead of trying to fight a hopeless war. So at one point, Chizkiyahu's courtiers say to Rav Shakeh, you know, instead of calling this out in Lashon Kodesh, you're speaking to us, the ruling elite. We know Aramaic; it's an international language nowadays. Speak in Aramaic. What are you speaking in Lashon Kodesh that everybody here, all the defenders, have to hear it? And Rav Shakeh says, "Adrabah, I'm trying to demoralize them too. I'm going to speak in Lashon Kodesh, but you see that everybody spoke Lashon Kodesh in those days." The Rebbe Rashab brings it, there's a letter that the Rebbe Rashab wrote a little bit either side of the year 1900 when there was a great deal of ferment going on over the whole issue of reviving Hebrew as a spoken language, as they did in Eliezer Ben Yehuda and the rest of the people who came after him. Somebody asked the Rebbe Rashab whether this is a good thing, and he answered that no, in the times of the first Beis Mikdash, they were on a higher level. Yes, they spoke Lashon Kodesh as their common daily language for all kinds of mundane purposes. But later on, we don't find they use Lashon Kodesh for mundane purposes like that. They use Aramaic for their day-to-day things, when they have their day-to-day business, and they use Lashon Kodesh for Dibrei Kodesh. And that's how it should be. It shouldn't be that Lashon Kodesh is used for mundane things. So therefore, the Rebbe Rashab was very against this idea of reviving Hebrew as a language. Later on, as time passed, it happened, and nowadays, there are millions of Jews in Israel speaking it. So there's somebody once asked the Rebbe about it, but the Rebbe answered that, you know what, nowadays they borrowed so many words from other and phrases and whatnot from other languages that it doesn't really have the status of Lashon Kodesh anymore. It's pretty much just like any other language in the world.
But it's Hebrew and Lashon Kodesh.
That's the thing, right. That's the thing. So they're not using Lashon Kodesh as such for mundane things. They're using Hebrew, which is, yeah. There isn't that much of a difference. A person who understands modern Ivrit can understand a great deal of Lashon Kodesh, but the fact is they're not the same. If you go to somebody on the street, and say to him, "Vayomer Achicha Lemer," you know, he's not going to know what you're talking about, right? Yeah. Okay. Question is, "Ein Malach Asheres Makirin Beloshin Arami." You're telling me that the Malach HaAsheres don't know Aramaic? Well, Tanya, but we learn in a Braisa, this is in Tosefta, also in Megillah Tainis. Yochanan Kohen Gadol Shama Baskel in Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim. Yochanan Kohen Gadol heard a Baskel coming from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Shu Omer, this Baskel said as follows, Nitzchu Talia, the young men won a victory, the Ozlu, that they went, La Gocha Krova, to fight a battle, La Antochia, in Antochia. Antochia is Antioch, it's pure Aramaic, exactly. Antioch was the capital of the Syrian Greek Empire, which now we're coming up to Hanukkah, very appropriate. Nowadays it's in southern Turkey.
Anatolia?
No, not Anatolia, Antochia. Nowadays it's called Antakya. Now it's called Antakya, it's a little village in Turkey. But yeah, in those days it was the capital of it was the capital of the Syrian Greek Empire, the whole empire with Antiochus and all that. Yeah, that was their capital.
Now it's a small nothing.
No, now it's a small nothing. It's just, 2,500 years later. But yeah, so he heard of Basco. Rashi says he was doing the Avodah on Yom Kippur. These Pirchei Kohona, Bnei Beis Chashmonai, the young Kohenim, the descendants of Chashmonai, had gone to fight with the Greeks before Yom Kippur. The battle took place on Yom Kippur itself. Koch Nefesh, I guess they had to. So Yochanan Kohen Gadol, while he's doing the Avodah, heard a Baskel saying that they won.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Okay.
The Shum.
What happened?
Okay, they found it. They found it. Interesting. Oh. They've been looking for it for years. Interesting. V'shuv ma'is v'shimon ha'tzadik. And then it also happened with Shimon ha'tzadik. Sheshama baskel v'kodesh ha'kadoshim. He also wrote a baskel from the kodesh ha'kadoshim. Shu oimer, this baskel said, v'telos avita, the army has been canceled, has been not defeated, but the army is not going to be coming. The Omar Sana'a Laisa Alechala, which the enemy said that he's going to bring against the Heichal, against the Bismedash. V'nera gaskalgas, Gaskalgas, that was the name of the king, was killed, Ubotlu Gzeroitzev, and his Gzeroitzev a bottle. So in Megillah Tainus, it gives a great deal more detail about this. This Gaskalgas wanted to have a statue of himself put up in the Beis Mikdash, and he was going to send his army to enforce it. So the Megillah Tainus gives a whole story over there, that they got the news in Yerushalayim, Erev Sukkot, and everybody was all worried, and Shimon HaTzadik tells them, don't worry about it, the Eibishter will take care of it. When the governor is coming through with the troops, many people come to meet him and to oppose him and whatever. Akitzer, the Megillah Tainus finishes off that, tells the story on Chof Beis Shvat. He heard this voice coming out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, this baskel, that Gaskalgas is killed, the Gzeira is bottled, and sure enough, our Gemara continues. Because they wrote down that exact time. In both cases, they wrote down the exact time when they heard it, the Kivnu, and it turned out it was exactly at that time. Exactly at that time, the first story that the army was defeated, that the battle was won, and the second time that Gaskalgas was killed. And in both cases, the baskel spoke in Lashon Arami. Do you see that? Hold on, baskel, we're assuming a malach is in charge of it. So you see, they speak Aramaic. Before we get to the answer, by the way, an interesting thing. So what's the story with the Gaskalgas? There are a lot of historians who say that actually that is Gaius Caligula, the famous, the infamous Roman emperor. He was emperor about 30 or 40 years before the flood, but he started out as a good guy, but then at some point he went crazy and whatever. Akitzer, at some point in the middle of his reign, yes, he decided, there's sources from that period, Philo, the leader, one of the leaders of the Jewish community in Alexandria, wrote a couple of books on Jewish philosophy and all, was leading, he led a delegation to Rome, he wrote a whole book describing what happened over there, he led a whole delegation to try and talk Caligula out of it. Josephus is writing a generation later. Also, he was a little boy at the time. Also describes it as a thing in quite a bit of detail. The upshot of it was that Agrippa, who we'll learn about in a week's time, as Hashem, managed to talk him out of it. He managed to talk Caligula out of it. He got Caligula to do it to him as a favor. But then, nevertheless, there was still the danger that he may always change his mind. So Chof Beis Shvat, as Megillah Tainus says, they got the news that he'd been assassinated. Or not they got the news. The news came later, but they got the baskel. No, so Agrippa had successfully convinced him, leave the Jews alone. How did he do it? Josephus describes it. They made a huge party for him. Agrippa had been a good friend of Caligula's for years before that. So he made him this gigantic party, and in the middle of Caligula starts asking him, what can I do for you as a favor? Can I give you gold? Can I give you whatever, this, that, the other? And Agrippa tells him, you can do me a favor and cancel this Zeta. And Caligula wasn't very happy about it, but he went ahead with it. But nevertheless, not long afterwards, he was assassinated, and therefore that removed the danger. Agrippa wasn't. He was descended from Brutus. We'll learn about him more on that man. Well, we'll have an interesting story with him. He cared enough about the Yidden, yeah. Derech Agav, by the way, it's worth mentioning, this that Megillah Tainus says over there that this governor is coming with all the army and with the whole army and the Jews. Not Caligula, Megillah Tainus just says the general, doesn't name him. Right. Says he's coming with the army and the Jews came out to oppose him. Both Philo and Josephus give a lot more detail to it. The governor of Syria at the time was a fellow named Petronius. So Caligula had sent him a message ordering him, you got to get the statue made and you got to bring it to Yerushalayim. And if the people oppose you, bring the army and kill left and right, whatever it takes, do what it takes. Akitzer, thousands and thousands of Jews went to fall before him and plead with Petronius and plead with him to not to do it. And he starts after a while, what am I going to do? On the one hand, the emperor is telling me, on the other hand, I'm not going to go start killing tens of thousands of people. So he tells the guys who are making the statue, don't be in such a rush about it, take your time over it. He writes to Caligula, he says, you know what, I have to find a way to do this without provoking a general uprising over here. Akipsa, Caligula sent him back a letter. By the time this message came to Caligula, already Agrippa had talked about it. So Caligula sent him back a letter. You know what? Fine. I've decided I'll be a nice guy. I'm not going to go ahead with it. However, since you have the chutzpah to tell me that you can't do it right away, you better commit suicide, or else I'm coming after you. Well, what happened? Right? What happened? Not long after that, Caligula was assassinated. The ship that was carrying the first letter took much longer getting there than the second letter that said that Caligula has been assassinated. So by the time the first letter came that Caligula is after you and you better commit suicide, he already had the second letter. Caligula is dead. I have nothing to worry about. So they just saved him. It's in Josephus, also in Philo. Josephus was a historian. He was a Yid who lived through the Churban. He was from a family of Kohanim. He was a general during the revolt, during the year and years before the Churban. Eventually, he defected to the Roman side. He was a Jewish side, but he defected to the Romans. He went over to the Roman side. He surrendered to the Romans, and then from then on he stayed with them. But eventually he wrote a history. He wrote a couple of books of history of the Jewish people, and one mostly about the events that led up to the Churban, another one a general history of the Jewish people from Briyas HaOlam until his time, and a couple of other books. He's not always totally reliable for a lot of different reasons. But there's still a lot of interesting tidbits. He stayed a Yid, but he was living among the Romans.
Very controversial.
Yeah, he's a very controversial character, but yeah.
But a tremendous
story.
He's on their side, so whatever, you know. Yeah. Okay, listen, you know, it's not time for a history lesson. Yeah, whatever, it's not time for a history lesson right now. But yeah, I thought this was all interesting stuff to mention. One thing, by the way, that I always found interesting about this, if you say that the Gaskalgus of the story over here is Caligula, and Megillus Tainus tells us this happened on Chofei Shvat, if you look in Roman histories, you'll find that the English date that they say when Caligula was assassinated is January 24th. The year when officially all this happened, if you look on a calendar, you'll find that was early in Shvat. So what kind of Chofei is Shvat? So if I once looked on a calendar and found the year before that, it was approximately Chofei Shvat, Chofala, according to our current calendar, but okay, you know, so maybe it was a year before. Maybe everything is off by 1 year in those years. In fact, when it comes to the Churban, Goyish sources all say that the Churban was in the year 70. Our sources, like the Rambam, say that it was in 69. Maybe that's explained by that shift. I don't know.
Because yeah. It should be on 69, Phil, for the right...
Yeah, because it would be in 3829, whereas Roman history say within 70, 3830, yeah.
It changes purposely, right?
Not purposely, necessarily, but it could be like there's a shift of 1 year someplace over there that something got mixed up, who knows. Anyway, okay, getting back to the Gemara. Okay, so getting back to the question is, and that these Baskels in these two cases were in Aramaic. One more thing, by the way, to mention, we could talk about this a long time, history is always one of my favorite subjects, but if we say that Gaskalgus is Caligula, which is about 30 or 40 years before the Churban, then the Shimon HaTzadik of this story can't be the famous Shimon HaTzadik, because he lived at the beginning of the Second Bais Mikdash.
And this?
This is towards the end of the Second Bais Mikdash. Necessarily, you would have to say that this is another Shimon HaTzadik. And there were a number of kind of better than that. We're talking 300-odd years apart. So necessarily, you would have to say it's one of the other kind of better than named Shimon. Okay, he borrowed the same of Baskel Shiny, so you can answer a Baskel is different, because after all, a Baskel is meant to inform people of what's going on. So yes, of necessity, it's going to have to be in whatever language people understand. If people understand Aramaic, then the Baskel is going to have to be in Aramaic. Fine, but even so, the people in general have to know about it.
Okay, so that proves
that the so in other words, the Eibishter, so Rashi says, it's not so much that it's a malach, then it's a midah that's in charge of, the Eibishter has a midah in charge of a baskel. So fine, that midah has to know 70 languages because it can be telling people, it has to be telling people things in their own language. Doesn't prove that the malachim know. The very same of Gabriel, however, or you could answer that the baskel was actually the voice of Gabriel. Gabriel was on a higher level. He knows the Amamad, but Gabriel, the Limdishim and Lashon. Later in our parak, when we talk about Yosef, that it says that when he came to Paray, that Gabriel taught him all 70 languages. So Gabriel, in fact, knows all the languages. The other Malachim, not necessarily.
I don't think it's hard to understand it. If it was a break, it could be able to hear baskel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, God will. That, you know, could hear in Hebrew alone, they not to be in the...
Okay, but Aramaic was still the common spoken language, so you'd want to hear it in a language he's more comfortable with. Getting back to the Mishnah, had said Birkas HaMozen is something that can be said in any language. Why? And be satisfied and bless Hashem, which implies B'cholosh and Chatham HaParach, any language that you're going to bless Hashem in. You should bless. Tosfos points out that the chiddush of that is, if it weren't for that, you would think we would learn Gzeir Shava from the brachos and how greeting, which had to be in Hebrew. But no, we're saying that it can be any language.
How can you bless it in a foreign language?
Why not? Blessed are you, Adnai, king of the world, etc., who created this food. The Gemara in brachos tells, in the Siddurim, you can find on the first page of the Siddur, the brachos for little kids, they have their Berich Rachmana Alakana Malkud Alma.
Right.
Where does that come from? The Gemara in brachos tells that one time there was a shepherd named Binyamin who sat down to eat a meal of bread, and afterwards he said in his own language, Berich Rachmana Mora the High Peter, and that was a valid way of doing the first bracha of benching. Shvuah to Eidus, the Shvuah that you make somebody swear that you don't know Eidus. For me, how do we know that can mean any language? The pasuk says, "V'nefesh kisechta." If a person sins, v'shama kol Allah, it hears the sound of an Allah, of a curse. I mean, b'cholosh and shishimah, any language that it understands is considered valid. Shvuah ha'pikadon, ase techta techta mishvuah to Eidus. And we know the same applies to the Shvuah of a pikadon, where you're making a person swear that you don't have my pikadon. Because we learn it by Zera Shavu from the word Techta from Shvuah to Eidus. Shvuah to Eidus, it says, the Nefesh Hisechta, B'Shama Kol Allah, by denying a Pekodim, it's Nefesh Hisechta, Omol Amal B'Hashem. That Zera Shavu teaches us that they can be in any language. Next, the Eilu Nehmer in the Lashon HaKodesh. The Mishnah said the following things have to be said in Lashon HaKodesh. Mikru Bikurim B'Chalitza Chula, the Sukim by Bikurim and Chalitza. Add, and then the Mishnah continues, Mikur Bikurim Ketzad. How do we know that Mikur Bikurim must be in Hebrew? So it says, Well, Nisav Amartu Lefnei Hashem Alekecha, you should speak up and say before Hashem. Well, Lahavim Oim of Anu Alavim V'Omdur of Halich Yisrael. Elsewhere it says, Levim should speak up and say to all the people of Yisrael, Ma'ani Amur and Ma'am Lashon HaKodesh. So just like by the Levim, it has to be in Lashon HaKodesh. Afkan Lashon HaKodesh. Okay, Levim Gufayim V'Nolan. So fine, where do we know by the Levim themselves that it has to be in Lashon HaKodesh? The answer is, Ask your Kil Kil Mimosha, because we make a Zer Shava of the word Kil. From Moshe by Matan Torah. Tivach Kol Rom. Here it says that the Levim should speak in a loud voice. Tivach Moshe Yidav of Olakim Yanan of a Kol. There it says Moshe would speak, and they wish to answer him with a loud voice, saying, "Anochi Hashem Alekach." Malahal Loshen Hakodesh, Afkan Loshen Hakodesh. Chalitza Ketzat Chula, we said, how do we know Chalitza has to be the Pesukim of the Hira, Mein Yuvami Lahakim, Kaha Ya'asal Ish, how do we know that has to be in Lashon Kodesh? We said that because we learned we said in the Mishnah we had two different things. One, the Chachamim had said that we learn it from V'onsa V'omra, again the same Zedah Shavu from Levim, V'onu V'omru, and Rav Yehuda says you don't need that because there's Kaha. And Kaha means exactly like this. So the question is, what do the Rabbanan do with the word kacha? The answer is, they say that it means only the things that are an action are ma'akiv. There's three parts of the chalitza, as we look in Yavamas. There's the chalitza, the actual taking off the shoe, rikika, spitting on the ground in front of him, and kriya, saying the psukim. The Rabbanan say that only with the chalitza, the taking off the shoe, rikika, spitting, and kriya, saying the psukim. The Chachamim say only the first two are ma'akiv. You don't do the chalitza, and you don't do the rikika, then you haven't got a proper chalitza. But if you don't say the psukim, that's not ma'akiv. Kocha ye'ose, like this should be done, implying anything that's not doing is not ma'akiv. Rabbi Yehuda, what would he say to that? Mikoi kocha. He said, because the Torah could have said koi ye'ose le'ish, and instead it's kocha, so we can learn both things. One, that it's only the things that are nasiya, and two, that it has to be dafke and Lashon Kodesh. Whereas, again, the Rabbanan don't hold of that limud. The Torah could have said koyet as kocha, that's not a valid limud. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda, hai v'amsa v'amra mai avid le. What does Rabbi Yehuda do with the v'amsa v'amra? The Chachamim said they use it for Zed HaShavu from Levim. The answer is, Mboilu, like Muru, Levim, the Lashon HaKodesh. On the contrary, he needs it. Fakir, he says, you Chachamim are saying that from the Levim we know that it was in Lashon HaKodesh, and from that we're learning to Chalitza. I'm saying the other way around. Because by Chalitza it's a Kocha, which means Lashon HaKodesh, from that we use the Zed HaShavu to say that by Levim it was in Lashon HaKodesh. The question is, V'leilach Kurl Mimosha, why don't we use the Zed HaShavu Kurl that we just said before from Matan Torah? The answer is Aniya Gomer. Rabbi Yehuda had learned the Kabbalah from his teacher, the Gzeira Shava, of the two words Aniya. Koyo Koyo Loi Gomer. He had not learned the Gzeira Shava of Koyo, and since he can't come up with the Gzeira Shava on his own, so he didn't have any other source to say that the Har Grizim and Har Evol, that the Levim over there, was in Moshe Kodesh, except by learning it from Chalitza. Tanya Mihachim, you learn similarly in a Braiser, the Yodam, Kol Mokam Shenema Koi, or Kocha, or Aniya Vamira, any place where it says any of these expressions, Koi, or Kocha, or it says Aniya Vamira, Eina Ela Lashon HaKodesh, then it has to be Dapri Lashon HaKodesh. Koi is, for example, Koi Tzavorchu, that there's a phonim, has to be Lashon HaKodesh, as we'll learn later in the parak. Kocha de Chalitza, and Aniya Vamira de Levi. I saw a verse that in this past week's parasha, at the beginning, Yaakov says to Malachim, Koi Amar, Koi Somer, Madoni La'isa, in Lovan Gauti, what is it, he's Koi? Based on our Gemara that was saying it has to be in Lashon Kodesh. Why? Because if they use any other language, that would lose the flavor of what he's trying to say. What is he saying? In Lovan Gauti, and Rashi says, Gauti is Gematria Taryag, but I kept the 613 mitzvahs. Targum Unkelus translates it in Lovan Doris. Doris is not Gematria 613, it's Gematria 614. If they were to say it to him in any other language, like Aramaic, it would lose that thing. So therefore he tells them, Koi Soma, and he's asked to have to say it like this, and Moshe Kodesh, in order that the message gets through. I saw the name of the Sefer now, and I remember it. I'm sitting in the Sefer, yeah. Baruch is the Kvalis case. Said, what happened with the Baruch is the Kvalis? Kivin Shavu Yisrael the Yarden, all of the Jewish people crossed the Yarden, they went to Har Gruzim and Har Ebal, and they stood on the mountain. Turn it up on it, we learn it a place. Where are these mountains located? The pasuk says Halayhema, the whole Hagrid and Harib. Now, there's a pasuk at the beginning of Parashat Yirmiyahu that describes it geographically. It goes like this: Halayhema be'Evra Yarden, are they not, or surely they are, in Evra Yarden? Acharei Derech Mevoy Hashemesh. Acharei means far away. Derech Mevoy Hashemesh, the way of the sun's coming. Or it can be going, it can be the sunrise or sunset, that's what we're going to talk about. Wait. The Eret HaKnani, in the land of the Knani, HaYoshev Ba'arava, who lived in the valley, Mul HaGilgal, opposite Gilgal, Eitzel Elei Nemore, Nechtu Elei Nemore. What does this mean? HaLehema Be'eva Yadin means Be'eva Yadin Be'elach, Yibir Rabbi Huda. It means, Rabbi Huda says it means, it means you cross the Yadin and you have to go much further. Yibir Rabbi Huda. When it says Acharei Derech Mevoy Hashemesh, it continues far away from the road of the sun's rising. Mevoy Hashemesh, he understands, means the sun's rising. Therefore, means Mokem Shechama Zerachav. It means there's a road that runs along in Eretz Yisrael that runs along the east, where the sun rises. That runs along the Yarden. This has to be Acharei, far away from that. Acharei is Muflag. Acharei means a far distance away from there. So it's not next to the Yarden, it's some distance in.
It can run east to west?
No, there's a road that runs along the Yarden, more or less along the Yarden. There is even nowadays called Highway 90.
Oh, I was there,
yeah. Highway 90.
Highway 90?
In Eretz Yisrael. Runs more or less along.
Just next to the Yarden.
That's the one. I'm talking about it runs parallel to the Yarden. Yeah. So there's that, but that's called Derech Mevoy Hashemesh. It's called the way of the sun's rising, because the sun rises in that area, and when you're standing in the middle of Eretz Yisrael, the sun rises over there. But it's not there, it's Acharei Derech Mevoy Hashemesh, far away. So Acharei means far away from this road of the sun's rising, so further inland. Inland, towards the west, towards the middle of Eretz Yisrael. The Eretz HaKnani HaYoshev Ba'arava, when it continues, the Pasuk says, in the land of the Knanim who live in the valley, this means, Elo HaGruzim V'Har Evel SheYeshvem Kusiyim. This means the famous HaGruzim and Har Evel, next to Shechem, where nowadays, and when Rabbi Yehuda is saying this, is over 1,000 years after the Torah was given, the Kusim are living there. Mula Gilgal, the Pasuk continues, opposite Gilgal, means Samachla Gilgal, means near the town of Gilgal. And Eitzel Elo Nemoda means Shechem. When it says next to Elo Nemoda, that means it's in Shechem. Why? Well, how on the Omer Yavah Avram Ba'aretz Avram Kaim Shchem Ad Olam Mora in Parshas Lech Lecha and Avram passed throughout Israel until the place of Shchem until Olam Mora. So we make a Gzeirah Shalom. Ha Olam Mora Al Malam Shchem Afkan Shchem. So over here in Parshas Yirmiyahu it only says Olam Mora, but we make a Gzeirah Shalom and say it means the same place. So it means the famous Hagrizim and Harevel that are next to Shchem. And the Gemara continues. Tanya, or actually Rashi takes out Tanya because it's all part of the same Braisa. When it comes to this matter, I proved that the Sifrei Torah of the Kusim are falsified. Now, the Kusim made a number of changes in their copies of the Torah. Among them are the one that we're going to talk about over here. That they, in these psukim, you have to go to Har Gruzim and Har Evel and do the Barach of the Kualas, they actually incorporated into their version of the Aseret HaDibros. Their version of the Aseret HaDibros has the 9th and 10th Dibros are to go to Har Gruzim and Har Evel and do the Barach of the Kualas, and the 10th one is to set up a Mizbeach over there. But not only did they do that, but also when in the description from the Pesukim that they have to go to Har Gerizim and Har Ebal that are Eitzel Eloheinu Murder, they added the word Shechem. So Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi is saying, I prove to them that that is a falsification. Why? I told them, Ziyachtem Terachem, you falsified your Torah, but why have you Yachem Kum? You haven't actually accomplished anything by that. We can easily prove that that's a falsification. Look, what are you saying? You're actually writing in your Torah explicitly that Eloheinu Murder is Shechem. Nu, Afanu Moedim Eloheinu Murder is Shechem. Fine, we also know that it's Shechem. But Anu L'manu B'Gzeder Shava, we know it from B'Gzeder Shava from the story of Avraham Avinu. Atem, you don't believe in Torah Shabbat there, but Ma'alam Atum, how do you learn it? So the fact that you put it in is a falsification. You have no way of knowing that Eloheinu Murder over here means Shechem and not some other place. You put it in because Shechem is your holy place, and you decided you wanted to make it official, you wanted to pretend that the Torah actually says that it's a holy place. But on what basis did you do that? Yeah. That's one opinion. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Rabbi Elazar learns like this, Halehema be'ever ha-yarden means somoch la-yarden. It means that this is next to the yarden, not like Rabbi Hoda is saying it's inland, but rather it's near the yarden. Why do you may have a yard of Eilach? Because if it's far away from the Yarden, it says when you cross the Yarden, implies right after you cross. Not when it comes, not further, especially because Rashi comes out of it here, from where they cross the Yarden until Shechem is about 60 mil. If you look on a modern map, and as the crow flies, it's about 30 miles or so, but you don't go as the crow flies, you have to go according to the roads. So it comes out, 60 mil is about 40 miles, it is. It's about a 40-mile trip from where they crossed the Yarden until Shechem is about 40 miles. They couldn't have done that all right away. Okay, so it could have been a nace. Tosus brings an opinion from the Yerushalmi that yes, according to Rabbi Huda, it was a net that they got to Har Gerizim and Har Ebal that same day they crossed the Yarden. Rabbi Elazar is objecting. You want to say there was a net? You have to have some proof for it in the puzzle. You can't just say yes. Next, when he says Achre Derech Mavoya Shemesh, when it says that it's a way. In the way of the Mavoy HaShemesh means the other way around. Mokam Shachama Shekas. It means on the contrary. Mavoy HaShemesh means where the sun sets. Yes. And therefore it means far away from the place where the sun sets. If the sun sets in the west, it's far away from that. It means it's in the east, near the Yarden. The Eretz HaKnani, and the Pasuk continues, it's in the land of Knani, and actually not really. Eretz Chivi. It's really the land of the Chivi. In this week's parasha, we have that Shechem. We're talking about Eber Yad means the side opposite where they were now. When Moshe is telling them how to Israel, hey, they're on the east side, they're in Jordan. They're going to be crossing the Yarden into Eretz Yisrael proper. That's the land of the Chivi that we learn in this week's parasha. Shechem is Shechem ben Chamor, Achivi, Nisi Haaretz. And when the plot continues that they live in the valley, what do you mean? They're living among the hills and the mountains. And Mula Gilgal, what do you mean opposite Gilgal? These mountains are nowhere near Gilgal. So basically, Rashi learned that Rabbi Elazar is arguing with Rabbi Yehuda, but he's not specifying where he says these mountains are. He leaves that for Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, which is the next opinion in the Braisa.
The Gilgal is not far away.
It depends which Gilgal you're talking about. There was a Gilgal that they first landed in when they crossed the Yarden. They camped in Gilgal, which is near Yericho. It's right near the Yarden. But there's another Gilgal mentioned in the stories of Eliyahu and Elisha. That seems to be near Shechem and Basel and that area much further inland. So Rashi learns that Rabbi Elazar is arguing with Rabbi Huda, but not really specifying where he thinks Har Gerizim and Har Ebal were. He's just arguing with him on the Pesukim and leaving it for Rabbi Elazar and Yaakov to explain what the Pesukim actually mean. According to Rabbi Elazar and Yaakov, the Pesukim are not trying to tell us the geographical location of Har Gerizim and Har Ebal, but rather they're trying to tell us how to get there. There are other Mefarshim who learn that Rabbi Elazar is actually arguing with Rabbi Yehuda, not only arguing on the meaning, not only arguing what on the details looks like him, but arguing that, no, we have to say Har Gerizim and Har Ebal are next to the Yarden based on these clues in the Pasuk. Now, what is that? There's no mountain next to the Yarden. So that's where Tosfos brings over here from the Yerushalmi, that according to Rabbi Elazar, they made two big piles of dirt and called one Har Gerizim and one Har Ebal, but it was right next to the Yarden, and they did the whole ceremony over there. Tosfos also brings, by the way, from the Yerushalmi, another possibility that Rabbi Shmuel says that they didn't do this whole thing on Har Gerizim and Har Ebal until after they'd conquered and settled Eretz Yisrael, until the 14 years had passed.
Well, why would they call it Har Gerizim and Har Ebal?
Because it's a mountain. It's a pile of dirt.
Well,
Okay, but yeah, it's big enough. I mean, you have a nation of 3 billion people. You know, 600,000 adult men plus women and children. Or you can get an artificial mountain put up in a very short amount of time.
The Gilgal is near Beit Shan.
That's what I'm saying. There's two different. There's a few. There's no Gilgal near Beit Shan. I'm not sure. The Gilgal where they landed when they first crossed the Yarden is near Yericho in the south of Eretz Yisrael, a little bit north of the Dead Sea.
Right.
And then there's another Gilgal. Then there may be another Gilgal in the story over there before Elio passed away, where he said to Elisha, I have to go to Yericho, I have to go to Gilgal, I have to this, that, and the other. It seems that Gilgal was near Beit Shan. So it seems that there may be two Gilgals. Especially, actually, the Mepharshim point out, part of Rav Elazar's problem is the Torah is describing in Parshas Re'eh that you're looking for a place near Gilgal, but Gilgal, the one that they landed in after they crossed the Yarden, was not named that till they landed there. And they called it Gilgal because they did the math with the over there, and Hayen Galoisi Eschepas Mitzrayim Alech, and I removed the shame of Mitzrayim from you. So when Moshe is speaking this a few weeks earlier, it's not yet called Gilgal. How can he be telling them Moha Gilgal? Necessarily, yes, meaning a different Gilgal. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Lo ba kosuv el laharis land derech b'shmiya k'derech sheher land b'rishena. No, actually, the pasuk is not trying to tell us the geographical location of Har Griz and Har Egel. You're right. You have all of Rabbi Yehuda's objections to that. No, what the pasuk is telling us: how do you go there? K'derech sheher land b'rishena. Just as the Eibishter showed them when they first went out of Mitzrayim, Rashi explained, they had the pillar of fire and the pillar of cloud to lead them to know which way to go. Now they're crossing the Yarden, that's not going to be going. They're not going to have that anymore. So therefore, the Eibishter has to give them a road map. How do you get there? So therefore, it means Marashah brings a different possibility that maybe Bereshona and Bishniya means that the Eibishter is telling them the right way this time. Similar to Bereshona means when they went to Sichon and asked him, we want to cross through your land to get to Israel, they tell him, we're not going to be going through the fields, we're not going to be going through the vineyards, we're going to be going just on the road. So here it's similar that the prophet is telling them the way to go on the road, not just traipsing through the fields. Namely, Derech, when the prophet says the way, means the Derech lechu v'lebesaros v'kramim. Go on the road, don't go through fields and vineyards. Hayoshev, when it says the Canaanim will dwell, means the Yishuv Mechuv Leibim and Baris. Go through the settled area, don't go through the desert. So it'll be a harder way. Ba'arava means Ba'arava Lechu, you should go through the valley, like the heart of a Gvaris. Don't go through the way that you're going to end up having to go through the hills and the mountains. So the Eibishter is partially telling them the easiest way to get from where they crossed the Yarden to Har Gerizim and Har Egel. One more thing, as I'll just say an interesting thing I saw from Kli Yakov. He says a drash on this thing about these three different things. He says there's three categories of people among the Jewish people. You have the Talmid Chachamim, you have the Bale Esek, and now I don't remember what he said the third one was, but let me see if I can remember it. So the Derech refers to the Talmid Chachamim. Stick to the Derech of learning Torah, not the status of a Krum. Don't get involved with fields and vineyards, not that your job. The Bale Esek, he tells them, and be Yishuv Lechu V'Leimim and Baris. Go in a settled way. Your job is to make sure that the economy is settled and everything, so you deal with that rather than and the third one, Ba'arav Lechu V'Leimim and Baris. I don't remember what he says that one refers to. I'd have to look it up again.
Yakon.
And Kli Yakon, he's Sukkim in Parshat Re'eh. Brings it now.